Welcome to part two of our series about quote unquote bad behavior. In episode 43, we talked about reframing how you think about bad behavior. If we approach behavior with the understanding that there are unmet needs of the students, we can connect and interact to set students up for success. If we react from emotion, ourselves as teachers and the students are set up for failure. In today's episode, we will share strategies to help prevent unwanted behavior so you can avoid a poor or stressful learning environment and create an environment where your students can thrive.
Welcome to Lead Your Homeschool Co-op. Do you desire a Christian community with families that fit? Do you find yourself up late at night Googling conflict resolution and how to build a community? Do you dream of a sustainable homeschool group only to feel discouraged when policies fail, logistics get in the way, or a conflict comes up again?
Hello! We are the Homeschool Community Builders. Together, we have more than 30 years of experience in leading successful homeschool groups. But at one time, we too were in co-ops that did not work for our families. We needed deep relationships and a community that would help our families grow in faith. In order to be a part of a sustainable Christian community, we stepped out in faith and trusted God's plan to build the community that we desired.
In this podcast, we will help you create Christ-centered policies, establish a close-knit culture, and develop strong leadership skills so that you can serve your community well. So grab a pen and paper, be ready to take some notes, and be encouraged. You can do this.
Oh man, if you've ever been in a situation where your kid's behavior was disrupting class, or as a teacher you struggled with a student's behavior, you know how quickly the situation can escalate. Emotions can run high and feelings get hurt. It can result in conflict between families and cause some serious division. So if you need help working through a situation like this, or if you want individualized help setting up systems to prevent this from happening, then I would love to invite you to jump on a coaching call. It's so worth it to save your co-op from broken relationships, and not to mention all of the time that it takes to work through that conflict and that brokenness. It just goes on and on. So sign up for coaching in the link in the show notes, and then also join us in our Facebook community at Lead Your Homeschool Co-op.
We are talking about how to deal with bad behavior. We kind of want to back up a minute and just talk about how to set up your community for success from the beginning. So maybe you can avoid some of the situations that we have talked about in the previous episode. What does that look like? Setting up your community from the beginning. Number one, in your family interviews, there is a lot that can be done to prevent setting up a situation where behavior is going to become a problem. When you do an interview with families, you find out a lot about maybe the kids' learning styles. You're finding out about the family values. You're finding out about whether this family understands the values of your community. And you find out about students that might need help in the classroom because maybe they have ADHD or dyslexia or any number of things that are going to affect the way they can operate in class. Just a side note, in episode 39, we talked a whole lot about what the interview process looks like. So you can go and listen to that episode to get some more help with the interview. But just for today, we kind of want to just touch on that briefly. Pam, you have some really good thoughts about how this interview process goes and why do we need it so much?
One of the questions that we ask is, what did you love at your last co-op or your last situation, or what would you change about your last situation? And if they came in saying, my kid was bullied by the teachers, then that would be a red flag for me, because I would want to know a lot more about that. What was bullying to them? Was it that they were asked to read in front of class because they have dyslexia and they feel uncomfortable with that, and they felt pressured to do that? Finding out if a student needs extra help in a certain area is going to be super helpful to understand how they behave in class. Is it actually a behavior issue? Is it that the values don't align with how we deal with behavior as far as how the co-op versus the family, are those things in line? And does a student need extra help in class? And is that available to that student when they're at your co-op?
So the second thing in setting up your school for your homeschool group for success is to structure your community not as a drop-off program. We know that, you know, some communities are drop-off programs, but our belief and our recommendation is that if parents are on campus, that that helps your ability to monitor and to modify behavior immensely. If a student has a behavior struggle, usually their parent is the one that understands them the most and knows how to deal with that. If you do have a drop-off program, you can always ask a parent to be involved. If students have behavior struggles, they need support. They don't need to just be thrown out there in the classroom and basically be subjected to being judged and censored because they can't manage themselves or they need support to manage themselves.
Yeah, you're putting both the teacher and the student, you're setting them up to fail in that situation. The parent has the best strategies for their students most often. And if they're available, then that's the best strategy instead of trying to make a teacher who doesn't know what the needs are for that student be responsible for that student's behavior.
Structure, I mean, we're homeschoolers, right? Yeah. Like, this is why many of us are homeschooling, because our not kids, well, one of the reasons, our kids are not made to sit in a classroom and be quiet and do all the things that you need to do in a classroom in that kind of a setting, in that kind of a structure. I don't believe that many kids are made to do that. That a lot of kids struggle, and it's not a great learning environment. They're spending so much of their energy just trying to keep still. They don't have any brain power left to learn. Not a great environment for them. And the third thing that you can do in structuring your community is your classroom pedagogy. So how do you teach in your classrooms? Are you training your teachers to stand at the front of the class and lecture to your groups of students? Or are you training your teachers to allow for periodic breaks that allow movement to be okay, that allow fidgets if the students need them, that help your teachers to understand that individual student needs are different and we can make allowances for that? We're not trying to imitate or reproduce a traditional school learning environment. Yes, it's a learning environment, but so often kids learn more when they're interacting, when they're communicating, when they're collaborating, and you have to be prepared for some noise and some activity. If you want students to be actively engaged, you have to allow some activity. Set your classroom expectations up for success in that you do things differently than the traditional school setting, and train your teachers to do so.
And when you do that, you will have kids that are more actively engaged and they will enjoy class so much more than if they were told to sit, be quiet, be still, don't talk. I mean, of course, we don't want them talking in the middle of class, but if they are actively engaged, have some flexibility to go with that, because maybe they have something really important to contribute, even if it's not at the time that you would prefer it to be. Right. Their brains don't work the same way our brains do. It's like a delayed effect, right? You might have moved on to the next subject when suddenly they have a light bulb moment. But if you shut that down, what are you communicating to them? But if you give them an opportunity to communicate that, that could be such a boost of encouragement that that student needs.
Yeah.
Well, on top of that, the students can feel supported, not just because of their behavior, but that they feel supported and loved by the person that is facilitating the class.
Right.
You'll get much more response or good behavior, quote unquote, good behavior, if the student knows that they're cared about aside from their behavior, which is most often what we talked about in the last episode, really stemming from an unmet need, more than likely.
Yes, right. Kids don't come into class determined to make your life miserable. That's not, you know, nobody does that. But
although sometimes it feels like it. Yeah, because sometimes it feels like that. And that's where reframing the way that you think about behavior, why that is so important. Listen to episode 43, because it's all about reframing how you think about behavior.
Yes.
I think that we need to unlearn some of our own schooling, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so many of us are a product of the traditional school system. And so that might inadvertently be the expectation that we have. But we're homeschoolers. We're not trying to replicate that. And we're not a full-time school. We shouldn't be trying to imitate the public or traditional school system, because this is why we homeschool, to have more of that freedom and flexibility. So we need to set up a different environment for our kids in which they can thrive, which does not come from sit, be still, be quiet. That's not what we're going for.
Just remember that you're building community. You're building your tribe. You as a teacher in that moment are helping a student be successful. It's not about trying to control. It's not an organization. So reframe how you think about the whole thing. You're a family. You're there to love on one another's kids. It's loving them first. Part of loving them is setting clear expectations.
Right. So if you set up your structure correctly, then you set clear expectations, right? Why do we have to have clear expectations? Because you're really, Hannah likes to say, clear is kind. If you don't know what you're going for, you can't blame somebody for not meeting that expectation. How can kids be expected to behave if they don't know what the boundaries are? It takes time and it takes effort to make sure that you're setting expectations for the parents, for the teachers or mentors, and for the students, and that they all know what they are ahead of time.
So, and a part of that agreement ahead of time is getting a commitment from those that are in your community. So we actually have our families sign something. They sign an agreement. Their kids are signing this agreement. They're acknowledging that they, what these expectations are. So the mentors need to agree to be an example. We don't get a pass for bad behavior. We are an example to these kids and also to the other parents. And parents agree to be involved and support the mentor in class. And the students agree to behavior that is conducive to learning. It takes all three to be in agreement to have success.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing I'd like to add there is that as homeschoolers, we live in a very casual environment. We're not normally in a situation where your kid needs to, well, it would be good to do this. I used to have my kid, like, if they wanted my attention, to just come and put their hand on me. And then that way they were not in, just be like, interrupt whatever you're doing. But for the most part, I think most of us, our kids can just come up and interrupt you. Doesn't matter what you're in the middle of. They just kind of know that it's just casual. So part of that training and that expectation is helping them to understand this is not at home. We're not at home right now. And the behavior that's expected here is a little bit different. It's a little bit more formal, which means that you're going to sit in a chair. You know, you're not going to necessarily lay on the floor. And maybe sometimes it's okay to lay on the floor, but that there is an expectation. And it doesn't mean that when the student's being corrected, that something wrong with them, but it's just that this is how it's going to work at the co-op, because you want to show respect to your teachers, but you also want to show respect to one another. If everybody's talking at the same time and nobody can hear what anybody has to say, then you're not respecting your fellow peers. So it's training them, but it's also giving them that expectation ahead of time that this is what it's like to be in this situation, because we're not just trying to train you to sit in a chair. We're trying to teach you what it's like to be in the real world when you can't just walk up to your boss when he's in the middle of talking to somebody or her, you know, you have to, there are times when things are going to be a little bit more formal than what you are at home. And to be honest, most of our kids don't, unless they have training on that, they're just going to act the same way that they did at home. So setting that expectation of what it means to be in a co-op, what it means to be in the classroom, and how behavior is going to be handled. So, okay, this is the expectation. This is, you're going to not talk while I'm talking. You're going to raise your hand or whatever that expectation is. And here's what's going to happen if we don't do that. And we're going to practice this. We're not going to get it right every single time. We're going to practice it. And it doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It's just these are the expectations, and this is how we're going to enforce it. Because we're not doing our kids any favors if we don't allow them to be in these different situations.
Kids can't be expected to behave if there are no boundaries, and some kids will push the boundaries until they see that there will be a kind but firm response to bad behavior. Like, this is all part of their training. Mm-hmm. So we want the kids to see that they matter, that they are cared about, that what they say and think is important, but they are in a learning environment and they need to be respectful of others. One of the things I think is important to have is an acronym or something that's easy to refer to remind the students of the expected behavior. One year, mine was LEARN, which was listen and follow instructions, enter and exit prepared, always do your best, respect yourself and others, and no excuses. It doesn't, there's so many of them out there. The idea is keep it simple and refer to it often. It's not a one and done type thing. You might have to go over it the first couple weeks of the semester and then again throughout, and then start second semester going over it again. And if it's simple enough, as it should be, the kids can learn this easily and recite it to you. And okay, are we following our classroom rules? You know?
Right. And it's easy to refer to.
Yes.
It takes a few words and they know exactly what you're talking about, right?
Right. But if you have a whole list, this is also a mistake that I made this year. I had a list because I read it somewhere. It was from one of our trainings or something, a list of rules of decorum. It was literally a full page long. I have junior high kids. We read it once and then it's like, well, what the heck was I thinking going through all of that? That was not simple. It was not something that I could easily refer to again. So if it's very long, if you have to take 5 minutes to read through it, that's not going to be an effective tool for your classroom.
Right.
And honestly, if you have a way to just get their attention that you use all of the time, then that's a great start. Like, it might seem weird, but I always go, if people are talking over me or I'm trying to start chapel or something like that, and everybody's, all this excitement's going on, I just say, hey, ho. And then we do clap, clap, shh. And they do clap, clap, shh with me. And every time it just works. It's so simple and it gets everybody's attention and it's easy and they know it.
That's a good
Well,
one.
And I think the reason that works is because it's consistent, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the next principle. You have to be consistent in whatever you choose to do. You have to be consistent week by week, and you have to be consistent teacher by teacher and mentor by mentor, so that the expectations throughout your co-op are clear. If you have a behavior problem or policy, I'm sorry, behavior policy, in order to curb problematic behavior, every mentor needs to follow the same steps. So you don't have a different way of correcting behavior in one classroom than you do in the other. And mentors need to be able to follow through. Because if you just threaten and you never follow through, that is so undermining for whatever efforts you're trying to do, right? But if the kids know the expectation, you go through the steps and you do it early on, as soon as anything happens in class, they learn so quickly that, oh yeah, they're actually going to do what they say. And so it gives them boundaries. They feel safe with boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because also kids need predictability.
Yeah.
When you're clear on the expectations, because they are consistent, they can then meet the expectations. But if the expectations are different for different classes, it can be really difficult for students to then meet those expectations. So keep the target or the goals stationary. Don't move it all over the place. And this is part of your mentor training, is for them to understand the importance of this consistency, that it really serves everyone in the community so much more effectively than everybody doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm. At our mentor training, we walk through scenarios. So we give people a chance to think about, okay, how am I going to react if a student does X, Y, Z? How am I going to reframe it? How am I going to think about that student? How am I going to think about this situation? And let's sort of practice these things before we get in the classroom and get thrown back on our heels by some kind of unexpected thing that happens in the classroom. Prepare yourself beforehand so that you can be calm in that moment and you can pull out of your toolkit the thing that you know you can use to respond rather than to just react.
I think role playing is one of the worst, most uncomfortable, but also most effective ways to do stuff like this, because you can glean so many great ideas from others. You know, my tendency might be to be firm and stop that, but someone else might find a way to bring humor into it.
Yeah.
And that's what I would want. You know, that's what I would respond better to. Hearing from others through that role play can be super, super helpful when we are also learning how to work outside of our standard skill set.
Yeah.
So just to recap, the ways that you want to avoid bad behavior is to prevent bad behavior. And the best way to prevent it is to set yourself up for success from the beginning. Interview your families, glean as much as you can about the kids, their families, and their values, and make sure it lines up with yours. But also make sure that you created an environment for that kid to be successful. If it is their parent being there, if it is just information that the family needs to help them to be successful in class, you will reduce behavioral issues by a lot. I don't know what percentage, but by a lot, if you just understand the student and where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. Then set those clear expectations. Let everybody in, the students and the mentors, the teachers, all know what the expectation is at your co-op. Do training on it. Be very clear. Reiterate. Like we always say, you have to say things multiple times and multiple times throughout the year as well, because you'll do teacher training in the beginning and by mid-semester, they're going to forget about it. And everybody's mm-hmm. going to be off doing their own thing, which is why it's so important to do the third thing, which is be consistent. Consistency helps keep the kids in line. It helps keep them safe. It helps them know what's predictable, and it provides success for everybody. And then you avoid finding yourself in those situations where families are against families, and it's just brokenhearted, hard conflict policy conversations that you have from then on out. And then as sad as it is, then sometimes you're dealing with the aftermath of that, which is never fun. So those three things, if you can start with those three things, you're going to end up being successful in preventing a lot of bad behavior. The last straw is to ask somebody to leave your community. If you are in a situation where you're asking people or feeling like you need to ask people, that's a sure way to give you as a leader burnout and make you want to leave and not be a leader anymore, is having to deal with this kind of stuff over and over. So save yourself the heartache. Do these steps. There's pretty simple steps, and they'll save you a lot of time.
Before we go, we would love to have you come over to our Facebook group. We have such a great group of homeschool leaders there. You can ask your questions, you can get support and learn from each other. And in fact, every month we have a live Q&A on the last Friday of the month at 2 p.m. So come and join us, because you can ask your questions live or you can post your questions ahead of time and we will answer them. We look forward to seeing you over there. Join us at Lead Your Homeschool Co-op. and there's always a link in the show notes to make it easy. We want to leave you with a Bible verse. Proverbs 29:11 says, "Fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end." So we just hope and encourage you to be wise, to be calm, to not be that fool that just allows their emotions to run away with them, but that if you set your community up for success with those principles, that you can be wise and calm, and you can bring that to your students. And just be encouraged. We do not have to be defeated by what other people call bad behavior. There are answers. We look forward to talking to you next week.
Hey, friend, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. If so, would you take 30 seconds and share it with someone who may benefit from it? Or leave us a 5-star written review in Apple Podcasts. It blesses our socks off to know how this podcast is helping you. Also, make sure to connect with us on the Lead Your Homeschool Co-op Facebook page and join the conversation. We'll see you back here next time.